This is EdgeCases. I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Wolf French.
And our topic this week is asset catalogs.
Asset catalogs, okay.
You don't know what they are?
Is that the Xcode thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've barely used them, so this will be very educational for me.
I have barely used them as well. I think I started using them last week.
Okay. Before.
So, but there is some interesting stuff to talk about with them. And there's also a tale of woe at the very end of this episode where your protagonist attempted to keep up with the other Joneses and write some more new code, and that, alas, failed.
You realize that you're basically competing with yourself at this point.
Am I?
Yeah, the other Joneses. Like, as I was referring to you as...
As the Joneses, right.
As the Joneses.
You're the other...
Okay. Thanks for assuming me.
We're both Joneses in this analogy.
Okay.
Mostly because I don't believe there's another neighbor name, which is as, like, James's, you know? Anyway, asset catalogs. So again, like the Thursday night NBC ads, right? The new to me, they were new to me.
Right.
Let's see if I can find a link to go to that one in the show notes. And so I've started using them for a client project where they were using them. Now, you get the asset catalog UI for every new Xcode project, but of course you don't need to use them. There is some documentation from Apple. It's called Asset Catalog Help about asset catalogs, and I'm going to put that in the show notes. It's a web page which is called Recipe, actually, the final page of it, and the link from Apple. And I'm not quite sure why it's called Recipe, because there aren't any it's not a tutorial. It's still just documentation. Maybe they just renamed it. And as far as I can tell, they were introduced in Xcode 5. I don't remember a WWDC session about them. They might have just been tucked in with other new announcements about Xcode 5.
I seem to remember there was actually something about them, but I think I saw them in the slides when I was like scanning through, and I never got around to actually going back to that. So.
Right. And I did look through the names of the sessions for last year, and I didn't see anything called Asset Catalog. So they didn't get their own session, whatever attention they did get. But so I'm going to talk about that then. There's a developer tool component and a runtime component for asset catalogs. Now, the developer tool component is a way that Xcode will organize your images files differently than it previously did. You know, so previously, well, currently for most people, image files were just like all other files in Xcode. They were assets, they were resource files, I think was the more common thing to call them. You would take them and you would copy them into your application package. And that's interesting. I think we're mostly pretty much used to this idea now with OS X applications. But if you remember when OS X kind of came out, or when OS X was introduced to the Mac community, the idea that you would have files inside of your application, standalone files, was a new concept.
Yeah.
Because previously, Mac applications were one file, but they... Now, they handled their resources a little differently. I know when I was looking at a Windows application, I seem to recall that, of course, they have resources as well that they need to put into their application, but they don't try to do anything too special with that. They just put them at a particular offset inside of their file, their application file.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to find them that way. And, of course, there are Windows APIs to get to that. Of course, with the old classic Mac, they had a whole different fork for it.
Yep.
The resource fork.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still just data, but it was handled in a particular way by the file system, by the specialized file system for Mac OS 9 and earlier. And it was very helpful for developers because they didn't have to worry about, you know, exactly what offset things were at or anything like that. They could just go ahead and say, oh, I don't want this resource called this name.
Mm-hmm.
And Next, from which OS 10 came, well, they didn't like different things. They wanted their file system to be like everyone else's file system. They didn't want to have anything special going on in it, at least to my memory.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't want to have an extra fork to put stuff in to their app, but they still wanted to have a way to have different kind of assets in their app. So they made this idea of this package folder that was a special folder that was treated specially by the OS, But otherwise, the files inside of it were just regular files. And it was kind of like having basically a dictionary lookup, because any file name, of course, had to be unique for any particular location. But other than that, you know, and then you know, when you look up the file name, when you find the file, you get it by its name. And that's what we did for images. You had a foo.ping image, and therefore in your application, you could say, well, I just want the image named foo, and it would, the Cocoa APIs would know to get that, and you'd be all set. So that worked just fine when there was only one version of a file, but iOS kind of screwed with that, right? Because pretty soon there were multiple different kinds of files you could have in an iOS application. You could have one image for iPhone and one for iPad. Mm-hmm. And you specified that. You could still use image named, the UI image API, to get to the file, to get the image. But under the hood, it would say, well, you're running on an iPhone, so I'm actually looking for foo tilde iPhone. Mm-hmm. I'm on an iPad, so I want foo tilde iPad. Okay, that's one distinction. Great, we can deal with that. And remember that because the iOS file system is case-sensitive, unlike the default for macOS, you mm-hmm. had to get the case right, too. If you had iPhone with, you know, the I lowercase and the P uppercase, then it wasn't going to find it because it was the wrong thing. At least, that's my, you know, I don't know whether it's actually... No, it probably didn't look for variations like that. Certainly, if you had iPhone spelled, you know, with the, you know, and two H's in it or whatever, then it wouldn't find that.
Fuzzy string matching there, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't do that. And of course, then they added more distinctions. They had Retina files. So at 2x mm-hmm. would be, and I believe if you had a foo image that was for iPhone and Retina, it would be foo at 2x tilde iPad, right? Or iPhone, mm-hmm. whatever. And then they even added another one, which was the version of the file for the 4-inch iPhone versus the 3.5-inch iPhone, which was foo-568h. Mm-hmm. And then that goes before the at 2x and then before the tilde iPhone, for example. So there's all these things that you had to do to get the different images for the different platforms. And presumably they might add a couple more in the future. Now, all of them are, except the 4-inch one, are described in this one document that I found, Resource Programming Guide About Resources, iOS Supports Device-Specific Resources. So I will put that in the show notes as well. And so that, you know, that was a bit of a problem for people in trying to keep all that stuff straight. And so one thing that Asset Catalogs does is they say, well, you don't have to do that anymore. Because when you drag in a file and you specify its type, the Asset Catalog UI in the project takes care of naming it the right thing when it gets copied into the application. Mm-hmm. And if you're targeting older versions of the OS, then that's all you get. That's definitely a benefit, but that is all you get with it. Now, if you're targeting iOS 7 or 10.9, OS 10, 10.9 Mavericks, there is a runtime component where they do something different with the files. They don't copy them in the way you normally would for files, and the way you would for a plist file, and the way you would for... It's actually hard to think of a specific files anymore, because so many of the files are processed in some way, like zip files and storyboards are no longer yep. copied directly. Mm-hmm. So what are some other examples of things that are copied directly? Well, other text files, I suppose, if you're using text files. Other... I don't know. fonts are probably copied directly. But... Now, image files are no longer copied directly either. Now they're pre-processed a little bit. And they're put in a .car file, assets.car. Have you heard of this, Wolf?
.car?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, I have not heard about this.
Yeah, so it's something new. And I didn't hear it either. And .car is used for a bunch of different file types, so it's actually a little difficult to do a Google search on it to find out information about it. And no, you know, we don't have like a Mike Ash post about it yet, so none of it's in our ecosystem. But there is information out there, and what I found was there's an iOS-artwork project done by Dave Peck, and so that's on GitHub, so I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And it builds itself as a command line tool to extract images from the iOS SDK. Hmm. And these are to extract them from .artwork files. The trouble is, since they switched from artwork files, or at least since they augmented artwork files with these .car files, the author, Dave Peck, presumably, kind of threw up his hands and said, all right, no, I'm not going to try to figure out this thing as well. He did do some research, though, which is what he put in his sort of README file. They are created by the AC tool, command line tool, inside of Xcode. So you can find that. You can actually do man AC tool if you have Xcode installed, and it'll just give you some information about it. And the man page says, compiles, prints, updates, and verifies asset catalogs. Now, Dave Peck also says, under the hood, the .car file is actually a macOS 10 BOM, or bill of materials file, which is a fairly old format from my recollection. But they're not quite the same, and he's got some more details about that. And of course he says, well, the macOS 10 BOM file itself is not documented. So all the work he was doing to figure out the BOM file is, of course, it could change at any minute. It's hard to figure out sometimes, that sort of thing. But this new file, they take all of your freestanding image files and they package them in with some metadata that I will get to in a second, and put that in your application. Now, they talk about, various people have mentioned that Apple says that this will save you disk space. And I suppose it might, but like an iOS, your application package is already zipped up, right, with that .ipa file, which is itself a kind of zip file.
Right.
And that's also the same in the Mac App Store. So I guess I would think it would only save you space if you're doing a Mac app which is not through the App Store. Because otherwise, it's just a zip file inside of another zip file, right? Right. So I don't quite understand that.
But, I mean, it actually doesn't... It unpackages it for actual execution, right?
Yes, but then you'd think it would also have to unpack the car file for execution as well.
Yeah, or they just could leave it compressed on disk that way.
They what?
They could just... Maybe they unpack the .ipa... as a .app for execution, but they leave the .car file compressed.
And well, until you need it, but you're going to need it pretty quickly.
Yeah, I imagine you would, and you think that would actually add to launch time. But on the other hand, you know, Apple has never been really stellar at launch times anyway. So,
what, really? I mean, on iOS, things start pretty quickly.
Really? I mean, we have flash storage there. It seems pretty sluggish to me, considering the technology.
For flash storage, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, certainly then they haven't made it any easier on iOS 7 because they got all those stupid... new animations, which take a long time.
Okay, maybe that's part of it.
I'll give you that. In any case, the extra thing that they put in the .car file, in addition to the files themselves, is information about slicing.
Yeah.
Which is, the slicing aspect of asset catalogs is really cool. I really like it. There, when you want to stretch an image, and usually it's for something like buttons, where you want these end caps, the right and left, upper and lower corners of the image to stay the same if they have like a curved shape, something like that. But you want the rest of it to be a solid color. Well, then you've got to stretch the image in such a way that you preserve the ratio of the proportions of those corners while letting the rest of it stretch.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do this in code with UI image APIs, resizable image with cap insets, and then there's a new one in iOS 6, resizable image with cap insets, colon, resizing mode, colon. But you have to do it in code. You can't do it. There is an exception to this. I'm wondering if you'll know it offhand or if you'll think of it offhand. But you get the image out of your application, and then you run this thing on that image and get another image which has what you want, and then you apply that image to, you know, whatever place you want to use it in UI image view as a button background image, that sort of thing. That's a real pain, right? So you don't want to do that unless you absolutely have to. And with this image slicing you get through the asset catalogs, you no longer have to. You specify the image slicing in this UI. We'll talk about the UI in a little bit. And that is saved off into the asset catalog. And then every time you ask for an image, or the system asks for an image, from then on by its normal name, it will give you the sliced image, the cap inset resizable image, automatically.
Mm-hmm.
And it will do this... at runtime, it would do this in IB, so your previews are correct as well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think I find that really, really neat. Really, really, it really helps to avoid problems and to make things faster and all that. Mm-hmm. I really like it. And so those are the developer benefits of what you get. But there's more going on here than just those benefits for you and I. Do it for you and me, anyway. When I was first looking at the asset catalog feature in Xcode, and last week, all of last week, I remember it like it was yesterday, I commented to my coworkers that the asset catalog feature in Xcode seemed to have been designed by someone who hates Xcode. Okay? Because at the model level and at the UI level, these things are just different than how Xcode has done things in the past. So, okay, the model level. If you tried to drag in some files into your asset catalog, and Xcode says, oh, hey, here's what you want to do with it, blah, 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 and then you look at your Git status, there will be no changes to your project file. Not a one. So what it's actually doing is it is not adding them to the project at all. It is having this asset catalog feature say, well, this asset catalog is in this folder, in this location on your file system. But from then on, to figure out the rest of it, to figure out all of the images files that you have in there, to figure out all the metadata that you have in there about those image files. And you can even make subfolders as well. So all this structure that's in there, it has to read from the file system again, because it isn't storing any of it in Xcode. And so that's weird, right? That's not like most of the way, the rest of the way that Xcode works. It's the closest thing I can imagine is like the blue folders, the folder references.
Yeah.
And those still exist because the Xcode 3 project format is pretty much unchanged in Xcode 4. But you know, this is quite different than that. And the thing that keeps hitting me when I use Xcode catalogs is that unlike blue folders, so even though blue folders don't give you files that are specifically referred to in your project, at least you can disclose them to see what's in them.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that with asset catalogs.
Hmm.
So that's the UI level. That's where the UI is different than what it was previously, because you have to select the asset catalog blue folder, and then to browse what is still a file system hierarchy, you need to go into the editor window, not the editor window, the editor view for an asset catalog. And you're given an entirely different UI for browsing. It's like IB. Like IB has that extra column to the right of the navigator column.
Yeah.
And then that column has what's in it. But IB, of course, IB does that because they're not files. They're something else. Mm-hmm. Whereas they really are files in the asset catalog. You know, literally, they're files on the file system. That's how they're getting that information. And so you have to browse the stuff there. And it's actually the same kind of color scheme as IB. It's black text on white, so it kind of feels like IB. And I would think that's, I don't know, they probably do that because it's not the same in the file system, just because there actually is probably more of a one-to-one correspondence between model level structure and UI, probably more than you think. That might have been why they did it quite like that. But it's still a little weird. And so when you figure that both the UI and the model level are different, you have to, you know, ask yourself, well, why did they do that? Because Xcode 4 was, it seems to me, an attempt by the developer tools folks to get everything consistent, to get everything working the same way, to get everything acting the same way. And, you know, they cut a few corners to do that. You know, they threw a lot more things into the navigators than I thought was appropriate. Things that were better off with a wider view, for example. They gave you file inspectors on the right-hand side for everything, even though, again, IB documents needed to use the file inspectors quite a bit differently than text file documents. Blah, blah, blah. I've had two whole episodes on my problems with Xcode form. But at least it was consistent. And now, one major revision later, they kind of throw that away. They say, hey, here's a new feature which works completely different in both aspects of it. So why did they do that? And do you know why they did that, Wolf?
No idea.
For designers.
Mm.
Because when you don't have to make changes to the project for adding files to your project, that means that there are no Git conflicts, which means that designers can go ahead and throw in new assets whenever they feel like it, and they never have to worry about coordinating their check-ins with anybody else.
Gotcha.
And also, I think actually the file name thing that I was talking about earlier, the fact that you don't have to worry about file names, that Xcode will take care of that for you, that's probably also for the sake of designers more than developers. Because developers, you kind of intimately know, you know, how it works and what things to call stuff. You know, try explaining that to someone who's, it's not their job to know that stuff. So they shouldn't have to deal with it. So I suspect, and of course I don't know anything about it, but I suspect that there have been people bugging Apple for some time saying, hey, this process is really hard for our designers. We want to make it easier for them. And so that's what they did. They gave them something that's better for them. Now, is that, you know, did they make the right trade-offs for this sort of thing? I don't know. It will be interesting to see whether they make further new features which use these specific trade-offs, or whether they say, well, our next new feature, because we added something completely new for this feature, now I can add something completely different from this than that feature, and also the rest of Xcode for the new feature. You know, is kind of consistency gone with the wind? Or was this a one-time thing? Or was this something that maybe they're going to do more of it as a paradigm? Because I can imagine them saying, you know, why do we have groups and files that are different in the project than they are on disk? And actually, Wolf, do you know why? Why they did that?
I don't.
Well, I mean, I guess I don't know that for a fact, but the groups and files as something distinct from what's on disk were added to Xcode, I believe, as a way to keep up with the Joneses with Code Warrior back in the day, because Code Warrior had this functionality, and people liked it in Code Warrior. And you know why they liked it in Code Warrior? Because things compiled faster when everything was in one directory back in the day. Do you remember that? I think it was mostly the .h files, like finding your .h files. It was much easier if they were all in one location.
Really? I never realized that was actually a speed differential there. Okay.
I thought this would have been the kind of thing that you would...
You'd think. Yeah. I probably could have saved like days of time if I only had known this. Days of my life wasted, yeah.
So what CodeWarrior did was said, well, no, put everything into one folder. But then if you want to distinguish between what they actually are conceptually, you can make your extra groups to do that. And so, you know, Xcode was trying to take market share away from CodeWarrior at that point. So they said, oh, we have to add this stuff in too. And, you know, now you get today where people use groups and files, but without really meaning to. You know, they pretty much usually mean to match the file system.
Right.
But then, of course, you know, entropy creeps in and things get a little different. And then you're not quite sure what's the same and what's different. And you have to blah, 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 blah. So I would not be surprised if Xcode gets more to the point where it says, you know, we're not going to support that flexibility anymore because you don't need it, and very few people use it, and that sort of thing. So they might, you know, this might be the first chick in the armor to do more of that. Okay, so, well, I have procrastinated long enough. Now it is time to talk about my project, because you heard me say that I really like the slicing capability in the asset catalogs, but the slicing capability does not work in older versions of the OS. So I thought to myself, could I backport that functionality? And the answer is no. But okay, we're going to talk about it anyway. The first step is to get the same information that would normally go into that .car file.
Right, right.
And there are a couple ways you could go about it. I could try parsing the .car file at runtime. Not going to do that. The much easier way to do it is actually just to take the same information that's on the file system, because it's all in the file system, and then add my own build step to do that for me. And so I did. I made a little build script phase. Actually, in my notes, it says build script, script build phrase. Okay, that's not right. And I wrote it in Python, because writing it in Bash would be, you know, I might as well just knock my head in right then.
Might as well bash your head in, yeah.
But I was trying to make that joke. Thank you. And Python was nice because it handles JSON really well.
I was just going to point out that I've been looking at this XE asset, and you go ahead. I'm stealing your
point. No, that's fine. Yes, yeah, so the metadata, when it's written out to the file system by the asset catalog feature in Xcode, is written out in these little extra asset catalog.json files that are in the same folder as any particular image set. And so the asset, let me see, what are my notes here? Dot image set, I think, is the name of the name of the asset catalog itself, and then any subfolders that you've added yourself, and then inside that there are the dot xc assets folder, which is actually any one particular set of files. You know, if, like my foo example earlier, all of that would go in a foo.xe assets folder. And then inside of that would be all the individual pings or JPEGs or whatever. And inside that as well is an assetcatalog.json file, which includes all the slicing information. Mm-hmm. So it's actually really easy to just go through all those files and pick up all those assetcatalog.json files and read them in. And I didn't even parse any of that data. I just held onto it as a dictionary associated with the name of the you know, Marquis foo, the name of the image, set, and put that into a file called, what did I call it? Something. So another JSON file. Mm-hmm. And I copied that into my application. So the next step would be to use that information at runtime. Mm-hmm. And so here I, Wolf, you may remember, I asked you about JR Swizzle.
Yep.
And so I added that into my project. And what I hope to do there, and of course JR Swizzle works quite nicely to let you override methods from any class. And in my case, I wanted to override UI image named column. Mm-hmm. And have my own thing do what regular the system iOS 7 Mavericks would do for you, which is to take the original image from disk and then look up whether there's a reference to it in the asset catalog. And if there is, slice the image and then return the sliced image. And in my case, I actually had some code which said I would also use an NSCache to cache mm-hmm. that image. Because if you do the resizable image API, you know, twice on the same image with the same slicing data, mm-hmm. it gives you a different image each time. So no, that's not great. So okay, I'll cache it and I'll do all that stuff. Great, mm-hmm. great. So that'll all work, right? And then we're all done. Well, not quite. So the first thing I wanted to use it for was a UI image view. Mm-hmm. Right. So, and you specify in a UI image view in IB, you specify the name of the image, right? Mm-hmm. It should be very easy in that they save the name of the image in the storyboard or the zib, and they call that at runtime, and you're all set. Nope. They actually don't use image named at all for any of this. And so there's a Stack Overflow question, which was answered by a Petro Kuryanov, which has some information about this. Put a link to it in the show notes. None of the UI image initializers or factories are called at all. Instead, a UI image view is initialized with initwithcoder. And in the initwithcoder method, let's see, decode object for key is called, and a key named UI image, actually the same as the class, uppercase U, uppercase I, lowercase, the rest of it, mm-hmm. is set from IB. And what it's set to you is an image. It's there's never a point where the file name is invoked in a way that I can swizzle.
Are you saying that the image is actually encoded using the NSCoder inside the zip itself?
That would seem to be the case.
Huh.
Now, I don't think so. I don't actually think so. Now, there's another one. There's another Stack Overflow question. It was answered by Michael Dowderman, and I believe I've actually met Michael Dowderman.
I know him, he was at MacHack.
Oh, yeah, okay, right. So he answered with a little bit more information in that the UI image is not getting... Actually, he says the UI image was not getting created with an initwithcoder, which would seem to contradict what Petro said. Instead, it's initialized using init with CG image stored... colon, scale, colon, orientation, colon. Mm-hmm. Now, when I went through the compiled version of one of my storyboards, have you ever looked at a compiled storyboard?
Sadly, I haven't. I feel like I'm not living up to my rep.
So there's actually a package called a storyboard C, .storyboard C. But when you look inside of that, it's really just nib files inside of it, which makes sense. It makes sense that it's nib files that go all into the system because the nib files are actually the system... representation. And of course, when, you know, in the bad old days, we would compile to nibs, and that was bad because they were hard to read and they were hard to diff and everything else. So, you know, they've added more developer-friendly intermediate representations of all this stuff, but at the end result, you get a nib out of it. So even with a storyboard, in the end result, you get a nib out of it. And when I looked through it, I didn't see, because nibs are still text files. They're just incomprehensible text files. I looked through them for my storyboard, and I didn't find, you know, that big set of incomprehensible letters and whatever that would make it seem like it was an encoded image file.
Right.
And there were references, although I couldn't figure out exactly where they were embedded to that file name, to my foo file name. So what I suspect is that it's still somewhere in the OS, somewhere at runtime, they're getting that name, they're doing something with it.
Mm-hmm.
But they are just doing it at a level that is just we can't even find.
Yeah.
Some private level. Mm-hmm. Which really, that stinks, yeah. You know? Yeah, it's too bad. Mm-hmm. So I tried an alternate second step, which is, can I just subclass the common UIKit classes and re-implement the functionality that way?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for example, instead of overriding UIImage, could we override UIImageView? Because UIImageView is the place where the name is specified. Now, that's still difficult because, again, if that name is getting sent to the UIImageView at runtime, it's not in a way that I know about. I think what's happening is that the image is getting created by the system and then it's being given to UIImageView. So there's no way to get in the middle there and get the image name. Mm-hmm. So what you would need to do, what I would suggest doing is using user set runtime properties, whatever it's called. It's the wrong name of it.
You mean the thing that you actually can set in Interface Builder?
Yeah, it's that extra thing. It's in a different tab than it usually is, where you can set key value pairs. And so, you know, you'd need to say, well, image file name as your key value, and then the key and then the value would be the name of the image. And then your subclass would get that information out of it and say, oh, hey, well, this is the name you want, so now we're going to mm-hmm. You know, now we're going to find that information out.
It's for you. In the UI, it's user defined runtime attribute. Yeah,
I knew I should have written it down. So you could do that. The trouble is, the whole point of this little feature was so that you would have code that you could then completely throw away mm-hmm. when you were only supporting iOS 7 and up after that point, or Mavericks and up. You would throw away all this extra little machinery, and you would just have your asset catalog and your metadata there and your use of image named and your use of all the other IB stuff. If you can't do that, you might as well not try to do this thing that I'm doing, I think. Because if you want to have code which supports iOS 5, 6, and 7, for example, or 6 and 7, just own it. Just do it and have your own thing. Like, what you probably want to do is store that slicing information separately. Don't try to use an asset catalog. Use your own data format and read that in and do something with it in your own custom code. What I've seen in the projects that I've worked on is if you are going to do that, you know, you're probably never going to clean it for iOS 7 mm-hmm. for the lifetime of the project. You're probably just going to have to deal with that old legacy code, you know, forever, even once you're just iOS 7 only, because it's going to be too much trouble to come back and clean it all up. Unless it's like your own little side project that, you know, you could spend as much time cleaning up as you want between revisions. But any commercial project I've seen, you're probably, you know, you're just gonna do that and you're gonna leave it that way. Now, another upside for not trying to do it the way that I was trying to do it is that it turns out if you use that slicing information in the asset catalog and then you change your build target to something earlier than iOS 7 or earlier than Mavericks, can you guess what you get, Wolf?
Yeah, I can't guess.
As there'd be a build warning.
Oh, well, yeah.
Right, well, okay. That makes sense, right?
Yeah.
And that would mean a build warning for every file.
Okay.
So if you have 100 files, hey, guess what? New 100 build warnings. And this doesn't appear to be something like you can do in code, where you can turn off build warnings in code, you know, with the clang directives mm-hmm. with that, because there's nowhere to put that. Right, there's nowhere to tell the OS, no, really, I know what I'm doing there. So you're stuck with it. And I'm a pretty big stickler for build warnings. So that would have hurt me as well to do that. Now, I won't ask you again because I'm feeling a little bad that I'm stumping you.
This is good. Like, you're making up for all these previous episodes, right?
There is actually another way to do the slicing in IB for earlier versions of the OS. Have you ever done that?
Maybe I have. I'm
pretty sure you have. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the stretching attribute in Interface Builder for your UI image view. Now, so I don't think it's available Actually, is it? It might not be. It might not be for UI image view. It might actually be for UI image. Actually, UI view. So it's something that you can use for any content of any view. I'm not positive of that though, but I think so. And I don't want to open Xcode right now. So if let's you know my foo image, right? Let's say that it was 100 pixels wide, and there were 20 by 20 you know carve outs in all the corners. What you do in the stretching attribute is you say, well, there is an X attribute, a Y attribute, a width attribute, and a height attribute.
Right.
And each one of these is from 0 to 1 as a fraction. So if you wanted to say, well, I want to do 20 pixels out of 100 pixels, you know, to start your image up, to start the stretchable area of your image, you would put your X coordinate to be 0.2. And then if you wanted to say, well, use from 20 to 80 as your width of the stretchable area, you would then say the width would be 0.6, because then, you know, 0.6 plus 0.2 leaves 0.2 at the end, and then you're done. And you could do the same thing for the height. And that gives you this stretchable capability for UI image views, at least. And it shows it in IB correctly and everything else. And you're all done, because that works in probably earlier than iOS 5 at this point. And there's no problems with it. So why wouldn't you do that, right? Why not do that? all right, another stepping question. And the reason you want to not do that is because this is linked to the UI views. Oh, there it is. It is UI view.
Yeah,
content UI stretch.
View. Yeah.
Property, mm-hmm. Which is, you're probably looking at it right now, deprecated as of iOS 6.
I was not looking at the documentation. I was looking at the UI. It is for UI view, as you mentioned, and it's generic as under the attributes inspector. And yeah, it's called at the very bottom of the attributes view called stretching.
Right.
But yeah, so it's deprecated. Okay.
It's deprecated. Now you can continue to use it in IB, and IB doesn't give you a warning at this point. I suppose it might give you a warning if you were just targeting iOS 7. Mm-hmm. Because then it would say, well, or iOS 6, even iOS 6 and up, it would probably say it then, because it would say, well, you don't need to use this anymore. You shouldn't use this anymore. But I tried a project with going back to iOS 5, and it said it didn't give me any warning. So you get all that functionality without any warnings with support for older OSs. You know, what's not to like, right? So I would probably say, well, if you really want to do that, do it like that for now. Until you can, you know, write a new project, which is just iOS 7 only. Mm-hmm. One of the downsides with that is, for example, if you have a button and you have a background image and you have a foreground image, the nice thing about having it be at the image level is that you could have different slicing or no slicing for one or the other, some slicing for the other for each of those images. Whereas because this other thing is just for UI view, I suspect that it would apply it to everything. Or it might even apply it to neither one of those. I haven't checked. So I think that's probably most useful for things like UI image view, which are not that complicated. And that's all I got.
Okay. I have a few notes here. I'm really glad you walked through this, because it was something I noticed, like when I created a new Xcode project, the XC assets file, and I'm like, what's this? Like, I know something about it, but I was too busy with everything else to actually look into it. So this is a very great episode in terms of not only educating me, but also stumping me on a bunch of stuff. Good. So what's interesting is that, like, I don't think I even clicked on this until this episode, the XC asset stuff. And right. It's funny, like one of the reasons I didn't click on it is, like, for some reason it doesn't make any sense. But I initially looked at it, I thought, and for me, I thought of it as like a smart group. Like this, I think they actually dropped this feature in Xcode, but I think they introduced it in probably Xcode 2, maybe Xcode 3, the idea that you could create like these filters of files.
Oh yeah.
But you know, I don't know why it, like, I think this is a bad hash collision in my brain, because those were purple and this is blue. It definitely should have triggered more of a folder reference. But I think it's because the small little image maybe looked like a gear to me or something, which I think.
Yep.
Anyway.
Little.
So I just was never intrigued to click on those because I never use those smart groups features. But anyway. What I'm most intrigued by is actually the under the hood stuff, and specifically their use of JSON.
Yeah.
This is very, very interesting. I mean,
it's different.
For a couple of reasons. First off, you know, that is JSON when Apple has this perfectly good plist format, right? Second, well, perfectly
good, maybe.
Yeah. And I used a little slicer tool, and the user interface actually kind of baffles me. I don't know what's going on, but I was playing around with it while you were talking. And so it modified the file where it kind of wrote out the contents.json file that kind of encodes the slicing. And what's very sad is that one of the things that plists were good at, I think they changed this to like 10.1 or something like this. This used to be a problem, especially with back then it was PBX. And its project file was kind of in an enhanced like ASCII plist, which actually still is to this day. It's kind of interesting. But one of the things that they changed was that they changed the format to so that the keys would always be sorted, I think, alphabetically or something like that. And the idea was that because if you're writing out dictionaries with keys, like those would just can randomly flip-flop any which way depending on how the hash works. And you'd get spurious conflicts where the keys would reorder themselves. And what's interesting is that when I went and modified this file, it actually initially apparently wrote out under the images or array of dictionaries, it wrote out a scale 1x file name second.ping. And this was based on, I created a new project based on the tabbed application, which includes a couple of default images. It's like a square and a circle to fill out the tab bar there. And so it actually flipped those two keys.
No, you're right. I've seen that too.
And yeah, so I don't know if that's a one-time flip or if this will continuously spuriously flipping them around. But this is actually something that was solved at the OS plist-ish level long time ago. And they switched to JSON, and now we have this problem again. So that seems to me, I mean, I'm all for JSON, but this seems to me a bit of a step back. That and also that JSON doesn't have like native date types constructs. But it's like weird on top of weird.
It is. It's true. That does make me start to think that instead of this just being a laser sharp focus on let's make it different for the sake of, you know, designers, for example. I mean, it could very well be that they said, well, we're going to make this. It's different because this was given to a new team, which decided they knew better than anybody else who was doing stuff before on Xcode. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to imagine that at this point, but yeah, just the fact, you know, why JSON? It's not JSON because the designers can modify it. You know, it's not meant for designers to modify. They're meant to use the Xcode UI. This is it's still too obscure, I would think, for people to hand modify this stuff. So I don't know. Yeah, there doesn't seem to be a real good reason why they would use.
And it's like not JSON. Even it's not even webby. You know, it's this is all stuff that is like is iOS native. So right, it's very very interesting.
Yeah, we have to remain a mystery, I guess.
And good job stumping me. That's pretty much the takeaway here.
Oh man, now you've encouraged me to try it again in the future.
Excellent.
All righty. Well, for now though, we'll see you next time.